federal law anyway. So when you're referring to federal law, that definition is there.
So what you're saying, actually, what provider of health care service referred to actually were those who would make up the council.
Right.
And so you're saying, since we've already referred to it in very minimal language here in the front, the feeling is we no longer have to place it there.
The definition, yeah. They were the same anyway, the definitions that we were using.
They're exactly the same, that's for sure.
Madam Chairman, Janice just pointed out one technical, the typographical, apparently on page 5, line 13, is supposed to be violation of section 81, to be instead of 71.
That refers to the capricious accusation on page 4.
To repeat that.
That refers to the capricious accusation.
Okay, the error.
Yeah.
What's the error?
Oh, the error was on page 5, line 15. Instead of 71E, it should be 81E.
Get to moving the bill?
Yeah.
All in favor of moving the bill? All opposed? We'll stand at ease. To pass out House Bill 665 with individual recommendations. All in favor, raise your hand.
Madam Chairman? Really good. In fact, we got a couple of people in here who haven't listened to the to anything, and they come in here really to vote. I mean, maybe
don't know anything about the bill.
You know, really what's happened here today so far.
Mr.
If you could enlighten them as to what's happened here today.
Yes, I will, Mr. Happy. What's happened here today is that we have looked at the version back from Legislative Affairs. It has made the changes that we requested the last time we reviewed the bill. There are no significant differences from the version we requested to be drafted, and the bill is in the condition that we requested, and now the motion is whether or not to move the bill out of committee.
How did the motion end up?
It was a tie. At this point, there was a tie.
May I ask for reconsideration? Is that an appropriate motion? I do.
Does it have a referral finding?
Yes, it does. All in favor of passing the bill out of committee, raise your hand.
I'm all for reconsideration, Madam Chairman, but I don't know how we can do it. I don't think the bill was going to be defeated on the pass out motion. I'd be happy to move the bill for reconsideration, but I don't think we're appropriate.
How is that best handled in committee, Mr. Carr? Do you want?
Well, Madam, Mr. Strassi didn't move reconsideration.
Okay.
I know to reconsider.
Well, I thought that's what I was doing, Mr. Carr. The motion is to reconsider. I assume she's bringing up a reconsideration at this time.
That's the case, Madam. It's going to be.
On reconsideration, those in favor of moving out the bill, raise your hand. Bill is moved down. Individual recommendations. Thank you, gentlemen.
Frequently to find all of the references to any of the acts that they wish to take, including the courts, because they're scattered throughout all of the different titles. What this resolution is requesting, actually, is that this work be continued. I think when we got it started, Legislative Council recognized the fact that it would be an 18 to 24 month job in going through all of the statutes. Several years ago, we did, about two years ago, we took the first step by Legislative Affairs Agency going through the all the statutes and Xeroxing, including a big loose leaf binder, and now it's a matter of kind of go back and codify them. This resolution is merely requesting that the Legislative Council or Legislative Affairs Agency continue this job until it's completed. We would like to. Of course, we attached a fiscal note to it so that everybody would recognize that X number of dollars that are in the budget of Legislative Council is identified for this particular project. And we would like to keep the young man on, who's especially is children's law, to complete the job since he's been working with his task force for the past year.
Well, Madam Chairman, it was my understanding of Senator Chance that with all the research capability that you now have up there in Legislative Affairs as a result of this major reorganization that that took place last fall, that this type of activity was not going to be necessary. We had a somewhat analogous situation in the
Mr. Hackney, I can appreciate your concern, and it really been my hope that we would not have to do this either. But we've always recognized, though, that there would be areas of specialty that the staff would need to do contract with in order to supplement their areas of specialty. Had we actually had all of our people on board at the time that this project was started last spring, we would not have had to contract. And I'm sure you're well aware of the many problems we went through, and we really did not get all of our staff on board until after we were well into this session. And yet before, the group that had been brought together through the Office of Child Advocacy over a year ago, they were brought together under a federal grant. They had the conference of two conferences on the child and the law. Before that group completely disbanded and lost their continuity, we wanted to take advantage of their experience, and this is a group of lay people, juries, police, so forth and so on, that the Office of Child Advocacy had been having to do it under this federal grant. We wanted to continue using them as the citizens group working on the task on the code, because that was one of their first priorities or recommendations that the legislature should do. In order to provide them staff, because we did not have staff on board last spring, we had to contract with a young man who specialty was children in the law, so that that group could keep working while we were trying to get our own legislative staff back off vacation and then bring on board our research division. Now, this young man has worked with it for a year now. We would hate to have to change horses in midstream.
I noticed that there's a travel item here that indicates extensive travel required to research and receive input on children's law.
It's basically to meet when they
working on this for a year already.
Yes, when the task force meets. The task force is doing the reviewing, he's doing the technical work, laying it out before them, and the task force makes decisions, so forth and so on, then he does the technical work.
Mr. Palmer?
I've seen it for the second chance. How much have you already paid this young man who's working this project? How long have you been working for? Quite catch up.
We brought him on our contract December 31st. He had been on contract with Nagleson Money to the Office of Child Advocacy to bring him on contract last spring.
That's his wife.
Yes.
I asked some questions, but all I've ever seen come out of this so far is that Xerox stuff. Somebody sent a copy of you of them about sort of things, you know. Somebody did.
Well, the one that
Mrs. McGuire shaking her head, but somebody sent me a copy back in Fairbanks, at least a year ago, it was something that the secretary was sat down with a set of statutes and read, and it came to something really chilling, and he rocked it out. Which the whole job should have cost perhaps $120, and that was really all I had ever seen come out of it. So I was really wondering, you know, in other words, that's the secretarial job, which anybody can do without any prior training. So we sat with them, they've been showing you the law.
2 years ago, it took Fran Oliver 6 months going through all the statutes and doing that Xerox. And what came out was a three-ring binder about this big. And it goes through every title in the statutes. Now, this is what the task force this past year has been going through and trying. That way you identify where conflicts are. And this is where the judges and everybody else has said, well, you look at it in this one particular title, and then over here there's something that's conflicting, and then that causes problems. So once we can get it all together, we can start down through it, see where the conflicts are, where the gaps are, then bring the recommendations to the legislature. This is a project the task force has been working on now for a year. They convened in two conferences and then had their subcommittees working on it for a year prior to that on the federal grant through the Office of Child Advocacy. Their priority recommendation to the administration following that year's work on the task force as to what all the problems were with child and law, their number one priority was, let's bring together let's make a children's code, they refer to it as some of the other states have, so that anybody dealing with a child and family then we have to search through all the statutes, but they're all together here. And then once you get them all together, then you identify where you have conflicts, where you have holes, and so forth. And at that point, they come in and make recommendations to the legislature.
So can I ask a question? Then, we understand that this contract, in other words, will finish up the job, is that what we asked for?
Yes.
We will have it, $27,000 spent for this, and then the children's...
We anticipate that their job will be finished by the end of the next fiscal year, we do. Which is...
I don't know who sent me this other thing, athletic team, the office of child, advocacy, that's my recollection. If not, if we ran binder in, I'm sorry.
Well, actually, no.
But it was a Xerox, but it's gone through a Xerox out statute. It was about this thing, you want to bring? And that's real, I think.
I don't know where that...
If any good secretary would have done that, it would have cost $100, and, you know, prior to...
Well, it was during an interim 2 years ago, I made the request to legislative affairs agency to go through and identify all of them so that the group brought together under the Conference of the Child and the Law would have this, you know, have something to start working with by the time they started their, came together for their second conference. And at that point, I think we only get 3 copies, or was it 4 that we provided with to the Office of Child Advocacy. We didn't want to go through the expense of printing it since it was just sort of a working document. And it would be used by that task force and the staff attorney. And it turned out that we did not have a staff attorney available. And so we enabled some money through out of Office of Child Advocacy budget so that we could keep that project going. By the time it got to the point, we had to have legal staff available. And then legislative council picked them up when that money ran out, and now we've, the resolution is requesting the project continue until it gets finished. So that any money that is, that comes through in the legislative council budget, we know that there's that much identified for that. What we're trying to do this time is, as these resolutions pass, directing the legislative council to do it, legislative staff is going to be directed to carry through with it. And then they will be reporting directly to council. And rather than the large number of subcommittees and committees we've seen in the past, so we can identify right within the legislative council budget what has been approved by the whole legislature. There will be some contingency funds in there too, and so forth and so on. But anytime a resolution is passed and we are committed to all money, and if there's a fiscal note attached to it, we are committed not to building on the fiscal note.
Well, then, Chairman, if I might answer, what are you actually developing? Are you developing a children's code, or are you developing a family code? Or?
Well, you can hardly deal with children without also looking at the laws of the family laws that relate to children, is all. I did not draft the language for certain.
Well, the indication is that the time and expertise and everything else isn't really there to deal with the family unit. What are we going to end up with when we get done?
A children's code.
Which is going to happen.
Well, resolution, of course, says something else. So, is there a chance to get a copy of it?
Yes, I
do. It's just 927. We look at the whole view resolved clause to see if we're talking about something other than children's code. This is far into the solution down, but that's something, understanding of that much is something that I really fear to handle at this time. So, when you do remember that, you say, no children, no family law.
It doesn't matter to me. It's not my resolution, as you notice, but the people that are involved in the project know exactly what it is.
I don't know whether we're groping around with a legal term that we're not familiar with, but I assume that this was drafted up on the trustee affairs. I don't get hung up on whether family law doesn't mean children or whether it means in the context of the family. It seems to me that's not a contradictory term. I just don't I find that difficult to deal with. There are families who don't have children, but I don't think that throws out the major meaning of what family law might be. It doesn't, I just can't see why there's such a problem with that.
Madam Chairman, it seems to me this has become a new term of the art. I know that local trial magazines now, they're talking about family law, the things that revolve around it. And I think it does encompass just a little bit more than just the children's codes.
Well, I think all of us recognize the children's codes.
But in order to effectively affect the children, we probably have to live with the family. The question, I think, was whether you thought that was too big a project to encompass it. Or do you feel that it's adequate? With 2 years of work under our belt,
well,
it seemed to me
the legislation, as I recall, that was introduced at the request of the task force on the Senate side, deals with subjects such as guardian ad litem for children involved in divorce or estate settlements and things like this, you know. So this is where you're dealing with a child, you're really dealing with the child in the family unit, and I think you're probably right. I can recall reading the Crown magazine, I'm now referring to it as family law. But what we're talking about here is family law, and particularly as it relates to children.
I like the term myself. Are there any amendments?
I don't. Family law is misleading. What if a kid is to be excluded in our family? He has no family, right? You're going to exclude him from the law. What about the family that has no children? Do they belong in it with the children's code?
No. Pretty obvious.
You know, it appears to me that this thing, unless either one of two things happen, somebody has missed a boat here, and we've got to find difficulty, or we're not clear, we're using one title, which says children's code, and talking about something else, you know, do or not synonymous.
On the other hand, I'm not hung up on it at all. I think children's code is going to get the same thing.
Yeah. Well, as I say, neither term is mutually exclusive. But the children's code means children. Family law would assume the family law that revolves around matters regarding children. If you have a child who doesn't have any family, well, he's going to be included if he's an orphan, because we don't have much in foster care. And the children's code, it seems to me, would deal with the entire spectrum of whatever relates to children.
Are there any amendments? We seem to be discussing a phantom amendment here. There isn't one on the
agenda. Well, it's relating to the development family here. That should be sufficiently broad to keep this thing going for years.
Yeah. I didn't get your movement then. What was it?
Relating to the development of family law, of a family law code.
So you're talking about line 5?
Yeah.
Relating to the development of a family law code. Is there objection to the amendment?
Madam Chair, I wonder if that's a recognizable terminology for the family law code.
Just heard how everybody was moving towards the
family. It is.
That's
the
one you said, family law code. Okay. Developing is what you said, it is in the term of art.
Okay. Hearing no objection. Amendment is adopted. Are you ready for action on the bill?
Well, Madam Chairman, we didn't take action on the check. We have a committee report here that says that three people have already signed that bill.
That was the last
one. I'm sorry.
We're getting carried away.
I was wondering why you were taking so long to sign 665. I knew it was hard for you, but why you were delaying.
I don't lose easy, Madam Chairman. I'm a fair woman, but not easy.
Yes, Mr.
Well, if I understand it correctly, and I probably moved down today, and so I can't say given to when we get through, what we're doing here is essentially the same thing as we've been trying to do with our criminal code revision. They'll come back to the legislature, the recommended legislation, to, as you said, fill the gaps revise any unclear statutes, the ones that are out there. So we get to the right.
I'm sure that gets on screen. This time we have the same problem.
Now, is it intended that would be a separate title in statutes?
I think that question is still unanswered even among the task force, as to whether or not it will pull together as a title, which would be referred to as the, children's code or family code or what have you. Or whether or not portions of it would be pulled together to be comprehensive, and the rest of it would be in a little booklet like we now get out of the education compilation or what have you. I think it's still an unanswered question.
I can see some problems with that, trying to make a title out of it, but I was wanting to make a little piece of a suggestion, which won't cost anybody anything. I think if you sort of desire it, we don't make a title out, a separate title out of it. That is the way we will perform, makes indexes to our statutes. Get it resolved, 85-90% of the problems are fine. But the statutes, at this present indexes are locked. I think my grandchildren know this about as well. You got a good index out of this.
But even the way they stand, if you have a proper index, you find yourself flipping from even one statute to another, and then you have to go back and double check to see which year or which. Yeah, you're right. And there's been such confusion, this is why this task force started moving in this direction, and I'll make the recommendation to the legislature when I crack on it. Yeah, I agree.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not so happy even find the family mentioned in law anymore that I'm going to move that this bill be passed out of committee. I guess I'm always intimidated when Senator Chan shows up anyway. I'm always making moves that I never thought I had in me.
But what power do you have over him?
Oh, thank you very much for your comments. Is there objection to the motion?
You should have swapped 665.
Yeah, we needed you here a while. Hearing no objection, Senate concurrent resolution 75 amended in the House is amended title in the House. Will pass from committee. And
thank you very much.
I'll have to go tell Red and Alvin that they are.
Just for the record, and so that I know, in my own mind, and I'll be able to sleep tonight, what we did today. What the hell did we pass out here in House Bill 665? CS for House Bill 665 amended, is that?
Well, I think it
was. We should show it properly.
Yes, it will be just committee substitute for House Bill 665, because we've never adopted a committee substitute before. So
what you have to revise is
the only amendments that we had actually were typographical errors, I think. So it will be this bill with those two typographical errors. The 71 will be 81, the T will be capitalized.
Yeah, see, we got all mixed up there in procedural things and motion and all this, and we never really did adopt that committee substitute. So actually, if you want to be a sticker, what we passed out here is probably House Bill 665.
Okay, I appreciate your
over my dead body.
Go back and do that.
So shall we make this
I agree.
CS for?
If you are, because I'm going to tube me on this, the chair will accept the motion to pass out committee substitute for House Bill 665, and the committee substitute will be this most recent version with two typographical type errors changed. The 71 will be 81, and there will be a period after 1,000, or it's strictly when the T is capitalized. Is there objection? Hearing that, the bill passes.
Aren't they?
Well,
I'm not surprised. I didn't know it, but it's just no surprise
that they've
been
more than
Democrats.
Oh,
here.
He did, huh? Why, those
Fairbanks
folks, they did
that
a lot. You never heard.
No, you don't know Ed Harbeck very.
I know.
You know Ed Harbeck very well. You know he's really been a Republican, a Democrat in name only.
Depends on many years. People, they're really Republican.
Well, you know.
Maybe they
you
know
can
it,
have
them.
They
know
it.
They know it.
They
know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it. They know it.
Ellen's got some business.
It was.
We still have to be on the calendar.
Madam Chairman, I can't read the number of the bill, but I have the material here. It's on the correctional industry. Now, I just wanted to get the feeling, two people, we discussed it very briefly this morning, and see if we're ready to act on it. We talked with Al and Glenn and myself on the correction industries, and would you look up that number, please?
592.
Okay. 592. We had said that we would go back and try to have a meeting with Houston and some of the others on this. Now, all I want to do is just ask a question here briefly. See, do you think that if we were to take the present bill and take only next year's appropriation, which was $210,000, and put in an intent letter which said that the fiscal note reflects only the fiscal year 77 appropriation, that during this year, only 15 long-term inmates be involved in the pilot program prior to some date certain in the 10th state legislature, that a plan of action be presented prior to any other fiscal note being taken under consideration. Would that be all right?
That's just 1 year.
Okay, well, just into just 15 long term, and they have to come back into the plan of action.
Okay, do you want to adopt that, as you said, or do you want to write it up on Friday or no?
I'd like to see it.
You want to see it?
It's a fair form. I have no objection to it. I have no problem with it at all.
Yeah, I agree. I feel the same way. I just think it should be drafted better. So we can have that done. We'll bring that up Friday. We'll have some other bills. Presumably that will take much
time. John, I'd like to mention something here. No formal action or anything else, but I did notice that the resolution in the Senate was going to pull back on the rules last night. I really recommend that the government not use that job.
Recommending what?
The resolution be appointed as director. And I don't really know what reaction of the members of the state has been. I wanted to wait until I thought about the OES. I didn't really find myself much of a Senate in that year, but I reckon that it's a Senate resolution that's not come to the House. I don't know how people feel, but I wanted to mention that to anybody who hadn't picked it up, hadn't noticed it. I don't know why I would pull back. But I didn't really get the indication that he's a man for the job at this point. I'm not in the guy who's, you know, the logistic. I didn't really think he was the kind of person.
Well, off the record, I think comments not good.
You're on the record. Yeah. Just a minute. Let's turn it off so you can be off. Meeting is adjourned. Do I have my own motion? That's wrong. Meeting will come to order. We're discussing today this one bill, House Bill 81. This is our preliminary hearing on this bill. We have a number of people here to testify who have come to Juneau from out of town, some I mentioned, and who were, although Alaskans were out of state at the time they heard about this bill and came back into the state just to be able to testify. If there's no objection, I'll take testimony from people in the order that names are listed on the bill. I'd like to start with Jean Smart. I'd like to have a seat with the table.
This is pretty cool. I'd rather from the alphabet.
But what I'd like to do, Mrs. Smart, is hear from the three of you who are here to testify today. Just allow you to testify, and then we will ask questions of all three of you at once. Presumably some of you will cover areas that others don't, and you can save question time and let you all testify first. The committee doesn't object. We will use this somewhat unusual procedure today. You may proceed.
Well, I came with the idea that I was just going to back the people that were intelligent up. I am a cancer patient, and I'm on vitamin B17. And I'm just
very much sold on it. So I want to be here to back them up. Really, that's my family interest. A year ago, well, 15 months ago, I was told by five different doctors that there was no hope at all. You couldn't even operate. And I could, I had to have assistance in more than anything. Through faith, I heard about this other deal. Vitamins and changing your way of living and your diet, primarily your diet, and the vitamins. And so I started on it. And I have thrown away a body brace that the doctor said I would never be without. I'm without anything at all. And the only medication, or the only thing I'm taking are vitamins. I'm not on any medication. I'd like to answer questions, but as far as talking, I'm not.
Okay, I think we will stick with this procedure that I outlined, and we'll hear from the other two witnesses, and then we'll ask questions of the three of you, okay?
This is smart.
Yes, this is smart, okay. Jody Hall.
My name is Judy Hall.
Judy Hall.
I'm from Soldotna. I'm also a cancer patient. A year ago last January, I had about 6 weeks to live from the finest cancer surgeon in the state of California. I went to Jenny Mason Clinic. I stopped off there, and they also told me to go home and see my lawyer, my banker, and my minister. At this time, I went home and did exactly what they told me to do. And then my doctor informed me that I could have all the painkillers I needed. My purse was very heavy because I had every kind of tranquilizer, including morphine and anything you can carry along with you to stop the pain. I found out about Laetrile, which is vitamin B17, and I was sure it had to be a better method than going around being a legalized dope addict for the rest of your life. What little time you had left, you really didn't care, you see, because all you was doing is looking at the clock to see if it was time for the next shot. I went to Mexico because I couldn't get Laetrile B17 in our United States. When I got down there, they told me they didn't pass out miracles, and I told them I wasn't expecting one, but if they had an extra one, I sure would turn it down. I've taken treatments down there for 3 months and came home. I had no medications whatsoever. I don't take any medications now other than Laetrile B17. To me, if this could just be legalized for the pain, look what you would be doing for your fellow man. And that's the most important thing. It's not something that's going to cure or create miracles, but at least you can walk around and have dignity. And this is very important. This is what we're asking for. Give us dignity and give us B17.
Thank you. Mrs. Christensen.
Increase in recorded history. Doctors have been harassed and penalized for trying something new, but old methods, once codified, can be used over and over, forcing society and doctors to accept these methods, even though the results approach 100% failure. A doctor may discover therapy which saves or prolongs the lives of 50% of the victims of a usually fatal disease, but he can be harassed or sued because he did not use the established method. The ones to suffer most are patients and their families, and in particular those who do not wish to have the orthodox treatments forced upon them. An editorial on Barron magazine, March 19, 1973, was devoted totally to this topic and cited a German study which used IFPA as the most undesirable sample of government control in the medical field. It found that people were literally forced to smuggle standard European therapy into the United States for personal use. One example of this legal harassment is Lyrica, vitamin B17, or amygdalin. Accepted and legal in 25 countries as a control for cancer, doctors and patients in this country who wish to use it as a control for cancer continue to be harassed. They can, however, use it for anything else but in the treatment of cancer without harassment. Cancer patients are not the only ones who have run into bureaucracy. Heart, asthma, and arthritic patients have been denied vitamin therapies of their choice in this country. Recently, an article in National Health Federation cited a Louisiana medical doctor coming under heavy attack by the bureaucracy and established medicine for using chelated minerals in successfully treating stroke victims. Clearly, there is nothing wrong and must be corrected to prevent further loss of life due to our obsolete but extensive practices. Established medicine is denying patients as well as doctors their inherent right to choose their own therapy. I, for one, and I believe the signers of the petitions that Mrs. Sullivan has, feel perfectly capable, along with our doctor, to choose our own therapy. House Bill 881 would still allow those who believe in drugs, surgery, and radiation to pursue that treatment, and would further allow us to pursue our vitamins and other therapies presently denied us. This freedom to choose should be our inherent right, but somehow it has been lost by the wayside. In a memorandum to Representative Rudd dated to Walker Legislative Council, states defects in the bill, citing violation of the principles of medical ethics of the American Medical Association, abortion laws, and other tenuous arguments against the bill. With reference to abortion, the key word in the bill is treatment. Definition of treatment is the act or manner of treating something, the application of remedies with the object of effecting a cure or therapy. And then the definition of therapy is the treatment of disability, healing power, or quality. Unless pregnancy is now considered a disease, reference to the abortion law here is meaningless. As for opening the doors to quackery, this has and should be controlled through licensing or practitioners. As for violating the ethics of the American Medical Association, the question often arises, what ethics? To protect the AMA or established medicine at the expense of the patient's pocketbook is held is cruel, to say the least, and these arguments should be considered nebulous.
With regard to Mrs. Christensen's testimony, I'd like to point out to the members that these are petitions that I received in favor of this bill.
May I add one thing, that there was no concentrated drug?
How were they collected?
Pardon me?
How were they collected?
They were just handed around and
spontaneous.
Yeah, really spontaneous. I don't know. I told everyone that I gave some to just to send them into our representative run. And they were not collected by me. They were sent directly to Lisa.
I'm not counting the signatures, but they're approximately 30 per page, and some that I've put in full, but
I understand there's still some coming in.
Yes, I keep getting some
today. Can we ask some questions?
Yes, go ahead.
So the three have now finished.
We have one more.
Oh, wait.
Okay, we'll hear one more, then we'll ask the questions. Excuse me just a minute, Hugh. I think
sure.
Patricia Denny was next.
I'm sorry.
All right. Why don't you go ahead and testify if you have some testimony to give Mrs. Denny, and then we'll hear Hugh.
I testify in that sense that I live in Juneau. I'm a social worker. I'm a member of Baskets for Life, a American representative organization. I read the bill and was very concerned about the reason for such a bill and the very broadness of it. during the testimony, I see that, that it has a very specific goal. And my question would be, is there some other way then to address that specific goal? I think they're looking at the broad ramifications of the bill as it's written. And it's somewhat confusing the way it's written, that there are all sorts of ramifications that have come to this that have to do with many of the things that perhaps are not the purpose of the bill. I have great sympathy for the things who have testified. Some of the areas that, that would very definitely be opened up have to do with conscience clause of people who are employed in hospitals, the rights of other relatives and family and the type of people that you prescribe. And I'm not prepared, nor am I an expert in the medical field to testify on all of the different points, but I feel that this, the bill is written as very broad and very far-reaching ramifications, and that there should be an opportunity for extensive testimony before any such broad bill is enacted to achieve very specific goals.
I noticed that we have several more people interested in testifying, so we will stop now and have questions of Mrs. Denny or any of the three previous witnesses. Mr. Swanson.
Yeah, I know that the drug has been in the news quite a bit, but in the bill of this scope, Madam Chairman, I think we should at least have something before us on how much the law has been repealed here. I notice 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 parts of the law have been repealed, and I would think that the, it would be well to just review that gently.
I think that's a good idea, and we probably will do that in the subsequent hearing. Mrs. Byrne, do you have a question? Or you have Mrs. Smart?
I think that's about 9.2.
Mr.
Hatton. Just a question about what the name of the organization, Freedom of Choice in Chemical Therapy.
No, Cancer Therapy.
Is that a statewide organization?
Or national.
National. Mm-hmm. Because they have a charter in the state of Alaska.
Yes. Well, we're affiliated with the national. However, I don't particularly want to be, since the hearing was, wasn't notified of the hearing until we, and it received Mrs. Sullivan's letter from last Thursday, I think it was. We did not have a committee meeting, so I really don't want to be speaking for the entire committee, although I think I probably would for the most part, but I don't want to really misrepresent.
I'm only interested, I guess, gathering of the signatures on the petitions.
That was done as individual, or it wasn't, in other words, the Committee for Freedom of Choice was not necessarily behind the signature for the petition.
Does this represent all the states then, or just the Anchorage?
The Fairbanks area was not too well covered, I don't think, because I really didn't know anyone up there, and I couldn't run into anyone. And Southeast Alaska.
How many are represented there?
I have not seen them because they were mailed directly to Representative Rudd and the President himself. So I have not seen them all.
Check that.
Okay.
Are
there
any? Yes, I do have one question. That's Mrs. Hall. Can you give us a little bit of an idea about what it is, what the drug is like, or how you obtained it, how you heard about it?
It's a vitamin. Right. It's a drug. Yes, I heard about it through Mr. Lauren Flanders. I was in Anchorage seeking my lawyer, like they told me, to get my financial affairs in order. And I was having lunch at Peggy's Airport Cafe, and I run onto this man by the name of Mr. Lauren Flanders, who's a very prominent man in Anchorage. He had just got back from Mexico because he had a colostomy and had cancer, and he was taking treatments down there. And he said, why don't you go down and at least let them look at you? And I only weighed 97 pounds, and I said, I don't know if I have enough strength to get there or not. But anyway, anyway, I got on the plane with my mother and went down there, and I started taking the treatments. I stayed at a place called Motel 8, which is a very inexpensive motel, and I rented a car, and I went across the border, and I said I'm looking for the place called the Del Mar Clinic. They told me how to get there, and at the clinic, I met people from all over the world there taking the same treatments. That's the last place you can go. It gives you hope if you don't have anything else.
Can I just ask a question? After you were given the prescription, I understand they gave you quite a substantial amount to bring back. Did you subsequently then ask other people if they would give you a prescription?
Landfill is not legal in Alaska. You can't.
Well, it isn't in the U.S.
No, it's not legal.
May I correct that? It's not illegal. That's the whole thing. It's not, we haven't still. Yeah.
The veterinarians have it.
There's no law against it for.
What do the veterinarians use?
Cancer.
They use for cancer animals. You know, I'm not sure.
And to pain.
About the pain. Do you feel that it alleviates the pain as much as all the other things do?
Yes, ma'am, it definitely does. And you have all your facilities about you, just like you're right there now. You don't have the fogginess of taking drugs. You know everything that's going on. You're able to communicate with your fellow man. You can go about your affairs. It's just, it takes the place of the drug, but you don't have all the pain that goes with it or the after effects of the drug that you would have been.
You didn't any time afterwards ask somebody to give you a prescription here and were denied that prescription. Mm-hmm. It's just really, what just told
you? I've asked doctors for it here and they say they can't administer it, and if they could administer it, they don't have it. And if they did administer it, they would lose their license. It's not approved by the administration.
Mr. Hagley?
Is B-17 legal, or can it be purchased in Canada?
It was purchased there for a while, but the McNaughton Foundation that was making the B-17 has moved to Mexico and started a huge factory and clinic there.
You mentioned two other names in connection with it. Are they all the same thing, B-17 and?
Amygdalin.
How do you spell it?
Amygdalin. And it was in the Merck Manual in 1907, and it was also in use in 1834. Amygdalin.
See, they've been using that longer than aspirin.
So these are really all exactly the same thing.
It is exactly the same.
They're just brand names. Does anyone know if it has anything besides just ground up apricot? That's all it is. Could we do it here?
We sure could.
Is it something that could be done anywhere? Mr. Parr?
Well, Chairman, I guess I'm not really quite clear from what you said about the intent of the bill. Now, the doctor said he couldn't give it, couldn't prescribe it, but apparently because it's not available to prescribe. I guess what also gets in trouble is so the intent of the bill is to permit a doctor to prescribe it, is that what I'm saying?
Well, to give us freedom of choice to ask for it, and if we ask for it, not to harass the doctor if he gave it to us.
There's no harmful effects.
No.
Fleischer, would you like to testify?
If I may, Madam Chairperson. My name is Hugh Fleischer, Madam Chairperson and members of the committee. I represent a number of individuals who are citizens of the state of Alaska who are users of Layetril and proponents of Layetril as a substance they feel is beneficial for them, both as a anti-cancer substance as well as perhaps a prohibited substance to prevent cancer from occurring. The number of people whom I represent is in excess of 50 persons resident of this state, and there are far more than that number who are users of Layetril and who believe Layetril is beneficial to them. I began representing this group of individuals after the petitions that were before you and which gave rise to the proposed House Bill 881 were being circulated or were being signed by individuals. And so I have not been directly involved in this aspect of it. And I have explained to my clients the doctrine of preemption in terms of the federal government and its role under the provisions of the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act of 1938. Food and Drug Administration, the Department of Health and Education and Welfare, has assumed the responsibility over the substance of Layetril, which is also known as by the original chemical name of omeglin, has also been known as vitamin B17, by virtue of the fact that it is being used and administered as a medicinal substance. Food and Drug Act does apply to such substances if they otherwise meet the terms of new drug under that act. And even though we feel it's quite clear that Layetril is not a drug, under the provisions of that act, it is described as a new drug, unless it falls within certain grandfather rights. We feel that that may very well fall under those provisions. We're presently reviewing that whole question. There has been a good deal of litigation with the United States government in various jurisdictions around this country relating to Layetril, because it is a matter of substantial controversy. It's a matter of substantial use by people throughout this country, people who believe in it, people who have, just as it was explained to me by Mrs. Hall and Mrs. Smith, been told that they were on their last legs, that they had nowhere else to turn, and when they in fact turned Layetril, that situation changed, and they found life, and found that they were not looking to the last door, but rather hope of a future life. And they, of course, these two witnesses, don't provide you with sufficient clinical proof of a substance's effectiveness, but it gives you some idea, in better words than I could ever relate, why people do feel as strongly about Layetril as they do. And I was just recently at the clinic, which was spoken in Tijuana, Mexico, and saw myself hundreds of people from all over this country who were in exactly the position, who were seeking care at the clinic in Tijuana, Mexico, which they were not able to get in the United States of America, even though they were citizens from Maine, Kentucky, Florida, Alaska, as well as from California. These were people who have carried out every conceivable step that was made available to them under standard medical care being afforded in this country, and we're now seeking this last alternative. I also spoke with a number of people there who have been under the care of Layetril over a 6 or 7 year period after they were told that they were terminally ill with cancer and were deemed to have no more than weeks or months remaining. I'm not a physician, so I'm not capable of telling you as an authoritative matter that this substance is, in fact, a cure.
cure. What I can tell you, because I reviewed the files of the Food and Drug Administration, I've reviewed the substantial amount of documents from the medical community, that no one is prepared to assert that Laetrile is harmful, in fact. Rather, the Food and Drug Administration's position is that they have not seen, at this point, in terms of their requirements, proof that Laetrile is in fact an effective substance in treating cancer. They don't feel that the evidence that has been provided by the McNaughton Foundation, the evidence that has come from Dr. Niebuhr in Germany, or the various other countries, and there are some in excess of 20 countries in Western Europe as well as elsewhere that are engaged in using Laetrile for treatment of cancer, that any of that proof is sufficient to show efficacy, as it's called, by the Food and Drug Administration, effectiveness of the drug. And therefore, they have taken the premise that persons might forego what they consider to be otherwise reasonable and accepted standards of care to take Laetrile. Well, the fact of the matter is that any of the other accepted manners of care can be engaged in while Laetrile is being used. But otherwise, the broader and the more serious question is whether it's really reasonable and proper for our government to tell mature citizens of this country, particularly mature citizens of this country who are operating under the care and treatment of physicians, that they cannot use a substance even though it is not harmful to them. And when those people believe very, very firmly that the substance is most beneficial to them, I think clearly the answer to that is that is not the role of the federal government. Well, of course, we understand that our state is not capable of repealing a particular administrative regulation or statute of the United States Congress. But we do feel that there are some appropriate steps that can be followed by this state, and they are in part suggested by House Bill 881. We have looked at the House Bill 881 and would suggest certain modifications that I feel would address the specific question that was raised by Ms. Denny, as well as by Mr. Swanson, in terms of the question of repeal provisions that are set out in proposed Section 4 of the bill. Let me just advise you what I have drafted as a modification, and with the authority of my clients, who are in large part the proponents of this bill. And by the way, I have reviewed this with Mr. Daniel David Walker of the legal office, and he has concurred in my suggestions. In Section 1, I suggested that after the word physician, which is set out on line 11, that we insert this language: so long as such treatment otherwise is consonant with the law of the state. So that the full sentence would read: the legislature declares that it is the right of every citizen of this state to seek medical treatment of his choice and to receive any treatment prescribed by a physician, so long as such treatment otherwise is consonant with the law of this state. And leading into the last clause, and I'll discuss that at this point, I felt that there may very well be some legitimate questions raised about the language of unless the treatment is conclusively proven harmful to the patient, because it does not set out who, by whom such conclusive proof would be given, or otherwise tends to be to raise questions rather than give answers. And Feldman further discussed this with Mr. Walker, that the phrase should be revised to read: unless such treatment is deemed harmful to the patient by, and I felt, some recognized medical authority in the state of Alaska. But we're willing to accept the Alaska Medical Association or the state board. We are convinced and knowledgeable about the fact that there is no way in which the substance in which we're interested can be proven harmful by any recognized agency, because it is not harmful. It's a natural substance, and there is no toxicity in the substance of laetrile. So we're willing to live with that standard as recognized by any authorized medical agency in the state of Alaska or by the commissioner of the Department of Health and Social Services. So I would consider and suggest to the committee that the language of that first sentence of Section 1 be so revised. We have further reviewed the provisions of Section 2 under the penalties provision, and feel that the penalties set out in subsection C are probably more severe than they need to be to affect the purpose that we feel is being sought by this legislation, and would respectfully suggest to the committee that the figures be reduced to not less than $1,000 or more than $5,000, changing it from $5,000 to $25,000. $1,000 or more than $5,000, and perhaps a reduction of the $500 per day, although we're not prepared to specifically recommend a lower figure for that. We feel that the legislation specifically setting out as the law of this state that the right between the physician and the patient should not be interfered with by third parties is the essential goal that we have, and that it does not need to have a major fine attached to it for purposes of that being affected as the law of the state. Finally, we would propose omitting the language under both Sections 3 and Section 4 in toto. That is to have none of that as part of the bill. We do not feel that it is necessary for the language of the bill to include a suspension of the license of a hospital. We feel that the language of the law is clear enough, fine provision, is enough incentive for any agency or individual to comply with the terms of the law as to Section 3. As to Section 4, and this is one which I understand and understand to be reasonable, cause some degree of concern. Of course, the repealer provision suggested repealing the promulgation of regulations of abortion procedures by the State Board of Health, State Medical Board rather, the approval of a hospital before abortion is performed in that hospital, the prerequisite of domicile of 30 days of any patient prior to abortion proper, allowable under the law, the definition of the unprofessional conduct by a physician, including the violation of abortion regulations or statutes, and the provision defining unprofessional conduct of a physician involving a violation of the medical ethics. We feel that none of those repealers is proper, and feel that all of such repealers should be omitted, taken out of this bill. And as we have proposed amending the first paragraph, first section of this bill, we feel it is totally unnecessary for the bill to address itself to the question of abortion or the other questions that are set out in the repeal provisions.
Mr. Fleischer, excuse me a moment. In your opinion, why was it that Section 4 was included in the first place?
Well, I talked to Mr. Walker about that, and he felt that from what he understood of the petition, that it was a broad, essentially across the board question of physician-patient treatment, and that was the bottom line, and that any interference, regardless of what it might be, by any party to the physician's proposed treatment would be unlawful. We understand the legislative history and the political history has gone into the question of abortion. My clients, I feel that the interest that's being addressed by this proposed legislation is in no way connected with the issue of abortion. I feel that the rights and responsibilities of citizens of the state are adequately set out by the existing law with respect to abortion. And upon discussing it with Mr. Walker, he appreciates our goal in this and understands that those repealer provisions could be omitted as we have revised the language of the bill. But that was the essential thought that went into it as to why Mr. Walker proposed it and in Section 4. We would suggest, as I say, that it be taken out and fielded, that would relieve a substantial amount of the understood criticism of this proposed bill, and at the same time fully meet the needs of citizens of Alaska who have proposed the legislation that's before you. I'd be glad to try to answer any questions that any members of the committee have with respect to our position and to my legal analysis of the question. That's
Mr. Carlin,
Mr. Carlin. Well, Mr. Black, again, yes. If the purpose of the bill is to make it permissible for a physician to prescribe medical, do so without coming under censure or some other kind of sanction from the hospital board, et cetera, so this bill offered for all of I don't think we discussed this, Mr. Walker. I don't really understand. We wouldn't have all these. We get some awfully broad things in this bill.
Well, I think it was unduly broad as it was originally drafted, Mr. Carr, but I feel that, as I've suggested, redrafting it, that it is not unduly broad, number one. Let me just address your first question. The purpose is to ensure that physicians may prescribe it. Well, let me just say again, the Food and Drug Administration does, of course, have a responsibility with respect to substances that are regarded as drugs under the Act of Congress. Laetrile presently is so regarded and is therefore under the jurisdiction Food and Drug Administration insofar as the transportation of that substance in interstate commerce. It is not presently approved for transportation in interstate commerce and therefore is not available for prescription as such. However, if it is the existing policy of Food and Drug Administration to not take any action with respect to the possession of Laetrile by a patient for use, and if a physician is engaged in the care of a patient who has Laetrile, this would permit the physician to, at least to the extent that it's possible for the state of Alaska to do so, to permit that physician to engage in treatment, which the physician in his or her best judgment feels is proper, appropriate for the patient. Do that without interference.
I understand that, sir, but of course, what it isn't addressing, for example, if you take Section 390 here on line 18, take that one section alone, you know, it covers an awful lot more things than just prescribing Laetrile, right? And it says in other words, that nobody is going to in any way sanction this physician as long as the patient is, not dying, because we have to go back to the top of the next page to say, you know, it's not offensive if it's a treatment, unless the treatment's conclusively proven to be harmful to the patient. Of course, that's when it's done after the patient's died. Usually, or else the doctor cuts off a long leg or something, you know, or a typical sort of malpractice. But the point I'm making, I guess, Mr. Chairman, here is that what we've got here is a bill that covers about 180 degrees and ought to cover about 2 of our full spectrum. That's what we've got. It simply redrafted and narrowed down to the specific purpose of the bill, I think.
Well, if I may, the people who are supporting Leah Trill, of course, are mindful of the fact and appreciate the fact that this body has resolved to encourage the federal organization, the federal government, to conduct more thorough and more expedited studies of Leah Trill to ensure that at least that there's a decision made at an early stage by the federal government's perspective. We don't have any objection to a redraft that would more narrowly define the purpose of the bill, although I feel that the premise that's being set forth is certainly proper, and it's a proper measure of legislation by the state with respect to the ability of a physician to engage in treatment of his patient without undue interference. As Mrs. Christensen has said, I think properly, this state has already set up a body of law that adequately protects the interest of patients in the licensing provision and in the sanctions that can be imposed by the medical association as well as by the medical board if there is improper conduct by a physician in the care of a patient in the state of Alaska. We don't, we're adequately protected in that respect. We don't have to be concerned about our interest because there is adequate protection there.
Burns, Watson, Kathy.
Hugh, on your First Amendment, as I have it written, and maybe I have it written wrong, for a treatment prescribed by a physician, so long as such a treatment is otherwise consistent with the laws of this state. Right. Now, in the case of Leah Trill, for instance, there really is no law.
That's correct.
And so what you're saying is as long as there's no law, then he is consistent with this.
Yes. Well, first of all, what I'm saying is that the repealers that were originally proposed in Article 4 are not in any way being suggested by this law. In other words, the abortion provisions remain just as they are. The other laws that apply to physician-patient treatment remain as they are. Insofar as the law as it applies to Leah Trill, there is no existing law in the state of Alaska that applies to Leah Trill. There is a resolution of the House with respect to it. But there has been no law, and I feel that there's a serious question about the state of Alaska attempting to take legislative action that would be directly contrary to the to a law as it's been interpreted of the United States government, specifically the Blue Drug and Cosmetic Law. Although that law limits itself to the question of interstate commerce, although the Food and Drug Administration would, under its regular practice and procedure, consider at least the seizure of a substance of a sufficient size if it feels it's being held for sale or commercial use on the assumption that it has come interstate commerce based upon their knowledge that it is being manufactured in Mexico and not manufactured in the United States of America. So it would be possible for action by the administration.
In your knowledge, is B-17, is it just a pure B-17? Because I think you can buy B-17 in the stores.
Well, there were attempts to, in fact, there was B-17 or later was being manufactured and sold in health food stores in this country under the name of B-17. There was a seizure by the Food and Drug Administration based upon this very thing we were talking about, a failure to have had it approved as a new drug under the Food and Drug and Cosmetic Act of 1938.
Maybe, I don't know if you can answer this next question, but I was wondering, I had also heard and read somewhere that possibly from the apricot pits that they also include a degree of arsenic. That
that this was another component, a very, very minimal amount, and there was some fear that it might build up since arsenic is something that builds up in the body.
Not arsenic, but there is cyanide is one of the aspects of Laetrile, which is one of the causative factors for its positive treatment effect, according to people who have studied who are proponents of Laetrile. But the Food and Drug Administration, I've read statement from the Department of Health and Human Welfare that was drafted just within the past month, in which that agency, which is the foremost agency of the United States on the question, specifically acceded to the fact that there is no toxicity to the human being in Laetrile, but rather a question of its effectiveness. But there is a property that is included within Laetrile that is hydrogen cyanide, and it is one of the properties that has a very important effect on its treatment.
Would B17 from any other source have that same component, or is it just B17 from this one particular source?
No, Laetrile or B17, which are synonymous, would have the same properties in full. And I understand that the same substance can be found in other natural products, not only apricots, but in bitter almonds and even in apple seeds, other products. But apricot is the basic product from which it comes, and that is the basis for the manufacture of Laetrile.
Mr.
Sullivan.
Chairman, I don't think that we could write a piece of legislation that would supersede the federal government, either their law or regulations. And more than likely with a resolution petitioning the federal government to modify or write us a new rule, we couldn't pass this unless we wanted to make a test case out of it. But if we were, the bill is far and away too broad, and we would have to narrow it down. And I have written a couple of words in here in lieu of his amendment that we read in section 1, starting line 9, that the legislature declares that it is the right of every citizen of this state to seek medical treatment of his choice and to receive any treatment prescribed by a physician. And here I would insert, including the use of Laetrile, which would absolutely put the, would narrow it right down to one specific thing. And I would continue, you could either strike the rest of that sentence and continue, it is the intention of the legislature that no person, group, organization, or facility interfere with the physician-patient relationship by attempting to suppress, restrict, or forbid this, instead of the word any, use the word this treatment prescribed by the patient or requested by that, by the patient, period. I think if you were going to deal with this, that's the form that you have to use, because we would narrow it down to absolutely one thing, and that would be if we were to move such a piece of legislation, that's what we'd have to do. That takes the broadness completely out of it. We're dealing with totally one subject, and that would be it.
Mr. Happy,
Mr. Sullivan.
If we were going to go even extensive modification of that, I'd sure like to have the gentleman down here to draft it, and I'd like to have him down here anyway. But just a couple of questions, so that I understand what Mr. Fleischer is, what role you're playing here today with the use of that down here. You're an attorney operating in the state of Alaska?
That is correct. I'm an attorney, and I practice in Anchorage, Alaska. My office is located, and representing a group of individuals who are proponents of Laetrile.
Are you being paid then to lobby the bill through?
I'm retained as counsel for this group. I've been here at their request as part of my legal services to my clients.
But now,
yeah.
Is there anything against this substance being shipped through the mail?
Yes. Food and Drug Administration
has not made comments, even though
the shipping through the mail acknowledgement of that Food and Drug Administration has preempted the responsibility for a question of interstate shipment of this substance by virtue of the provisions of the bill. But they've specifically taken the position that it's not, that they're not going to take any administrative action against individual patients who have Laetril, happen to have Laetril in for their own use. And they are aware of the fact that thousands of people throughout this country do have Laetril for their own use and they're administering themselves. They have taken certain actions to seize civilly supplies of Laetril that are being held for sale, for commercial sale in the United States based upon the interstate commerce fact.
Well, it would seem to me that we have a situation that's exactly analogous to the marijuana situation last year. Just break down the chapter and verse. They only different agencies of the federal government that has proscribed the substance. But I guess my problem is this. I really don't see how we can change that under state law. I just don't understand how we can do that.
Well, I can understand the question because, as I have consistently told my clients, the principal emphasis of any action that's going to affect their purpose is going to be with respect to federal government. So the federal government has the major role in so far as Laetril. But they are, of course, citizens of this state. They have seen interference with their ability to use Laetril in this state by third parties and feel it would be appropriate for us to at least address that question. And which is a proper question, so long as it is, as you said before, consistent with, otherwise consistent with the law of the state.
But you see, again, under the marijuana law that we passed last year, the federal government still has a law against it.
That's correct.
And it seems that we're in that now.
There's no question about the fact the federal government still has a law that applies to marijuana. Even though it is within the definition that's set out by the state of Alaska for personal use in one's home, it is subject to federal action. It's also a fact that the federal government has administratively determined that they're not going to enforce marijuana law in jurisdiction where the states, through legislation or judicial action, are taking action such as was taken in Alaska.
And yet large amounts of marijuana, again, are subject to seizure by the federal government.
They're also subject to seizure by the state government. It can be reasonably assumed that there's a large amount of marijuana that's being held for sale and is thus not under the protections that are set out in the marijuana law. And there are some cases which have evolved to have facts of that kind by the state of Alaska. But in any event, I think you're right. There is a parallel here with, at least in technical sense, with the situation we have in terms of federal preemption of the matter. But we've also seen, I think, a good test of what power and effect the state can have on a matter, because the federal government has administratively, at least, recognized the law of the state of Alaska in certain respects it is, and is not engaging the full force of the law if the use of marijuana is consistent with the law of the state of Alaska. And we're not, but we're looking at a matter which the state does have some authority in, with or without regard to the question of Laetril per se, and that is, if a patient is undergoing treatment by a physician, the physician has prescribed a certain standard of care, that standard of care must necessarily be consistent with the law of the state and his other responsibilities under the oath that he takes as well as his ethics. that should not be interfered with by third parties within the state of Alaska. And I think that's what this House Bill 81 addresses and what it can properly address.
Mr. Fletcher, if I'd like to make sure I'm understanding everything correctly. If the doctor in the state prescribes the doctor is not violating the state law, correct?
He's not violating the state law.
That's number one. All right. Now, second question. Is the action by the Food Drug Administration, is that by regulation or is that a federal law?
Well, the action that's being taken by the Food Drug Administration is pursuant to the provisions of federal law, Food Drug and Cosmetic Act of 1936.
Which is a blanket act giving them authority to classify them in a certain way and so forth.
That's correct. It's the New Drug Act.
Okay, so it's still an open question, isn't it, as to whether federal regulation or state law would take precedence. There's not automatic preemption by federal regulation, but state law is best on that.
Well, there's no question about the fact that preemption, the doctrine of preemption applies in terms of any legislation by the state of Alaska.
By regulation, by administrative agency.
If it's a regulation pursuant to a federal law, the doctrine of preemption does apply to.
If the regulation is in consonance with the law and it's not exceeding the authority granted in the law and under other conditions.
Right? That is correct.
Okay. So actually, all we're saying here is this is perfectly legal in the state. We could even pass a bill and say it's legal in the state. If Uncle Sam's legal on too, like we couldn't. And so actually all the bill wants to do is say that no hospital group or anything else or doctor group can interfere with the doctor who wants to prescribe this for the patient. That's what we really want.
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair,
may I ask a couple of
questions? As I keep reading through these repealers, which I certainly agree with you should be locked out. One of them was the violation of the Controlled Substance Act. And so I presume
that... I don't think that was actually one of the repealers, was it?
Yeah, it's...
3F?
3F. And it's a... So I presume that's the law that we're operating under in terms of testing food and drug. But I guess my question would be here, is that that is a violation. That's unprofessional conduct at the present time.
Yeah.
But this, again, is not included in the law.
I'm sorry.
Was not included
under
the Controlled Substance Act.
No, I haven't been able to conclude on that question. I did realize that there was a provision in terms of the definition of unprofessional conduct that one would not use or administer a substance that's under the Controlled Substances Act. The controlled substances are defined, I believe, as specific substances, and it would not include Lyrica at this time. That is my best information. I have not fully reviewed that, but of course, if that were the case, then we'd be dealing in circles because the physician would specifically be prevented from administering the substance if it were a controlled substance.
At the present time, since it's not included under that, there's no reading on this record.
That's correct.
Nothing against it or for it.
Well, except that it has not been approved. And Food and Drug Administration says that act that I've referred to, the Drug Cosmetic Act 1936, requires that any substance that is being used for medicinal purposes, that otherwise hasn't met certain historical provisions, be approved by that agency before it is in fact shipped in interstate commerce for use, for medicinal use. And they say they have not, in fact, approved it for that purpose, and therefore it cannot be so shipped in interstate commerce.
Mr. Fletcher, can you explain to us what sort of operation was in existence until recently in Kenya? Exactly what, as I understand it, there was some sort of clinic there, and now it is not operational, is that?
Well, no. Specifically what it was the Soldotna Hospital in Soldotna, and by a resolution of the board of the hospital in May of this year, resolved to permit the use. hospital. In February of this year, there was a motion passed board of that hospital specifically prohibiting the use of Laetril unless until it was approved by the Food and Drug Administration in the hospital. It was, in fact, being administered and resold by the hospital pursuant to the approval of the board of the hospital between the time of that approval in May and the time of this resolution I mentioned in February. Since that time, of course, it is not possible for a physician, even though we may feel that it is